can't be any worse than last week when we all forgot that we were doing a podcast. We made Andy produce the podcast, and he somehow, instead of doing all this magic that you do with Zoom, he did it all in Photoshop. But he managed to do the thing that you do sometimes, Kevin, which is fix things on the fly, and then somehow make them look
worse.
Yeah, that was good. Not you. He made them look worse. You make them look professional. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kind of Funny podcast. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside the second best baby blues in all of San Francisco, Mr. Tim Geddes.
Let's him host. Very excited to be here with you today, Nick.
And the Nitro Rifle from twitch.tv/AndyCortez. Nope, twitch.tv/AndyCortez. That's right.
Crush
That's
it. What it is now, yeah. I'm sipping on a little grapefruit juice, everybody, for this momentous occasion. Everyone.
You know what it looks to me, Andy? It looks like you have had a cocktail that was a little too big, and you're like, I don't want to finish this.
I don't want the whole
home.
Thing.
I just want to go home, but like someone's talking to you at a party, and you're like, I just.
It's warm. Yeah. Should I just leave it? Like,
just, it's mostly just the alcohol at this point because it settled down there.
I'm bloated. Yeah.
And of course, joining us for the second time on this podcast, welcome back, Adi Shankar. What's going on, man?
Woo.
Adi's here, of course, to talk about his new project coming up, which I cannot wait to talk to you about because, man, this thing is a ride. But before we get to that, this is the Kind of Funny podcast where each and every week, four, sometimes five best friends gather around these podcast mics to shoot the breeze. And of course, if you want to support this show with more than just your eyeballs, you can head over to patreon.com/kindoffunny and throw us a few bucks. What do you get for that, Tim?
You get a whole bunch. You get to watch the show live as we record it. You get the show ad-free. You get the exclusive post show. So many fun offerings.
So much. And if you want to back us at the producer portion of our podcast, my brain just stopped right there.
Sure did,
if you guys want to back us at the producer tier, I will say your names just like I'm about to do right now, which is Pranksy, Delaney Twinning, and Julian the Gluten-Free Gamer, and Pranksy again. Because Pranksy,
thank you, producers. Thank you.
This show is brought to you by Babbel, Overland, and Raycon, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. For now, I want to see this Louis Vuitton AT-AT walker that you've got in your living room, Adi. What's going on with this thing?
So my buddy Gabe, mm-hmm. I have a friend named Gabe.
Cool.
And Gabe is dope.
Shots of Gabe.
Yeah. Gabe's rad. And what he does is, he does like the physical thing, the physical version of the thing I do on the internet, which is like, mm-hmm. you know, I take like nerd culture that I like and then remix it and kind of try to upscale it in a way, right? To like make it more sophisticated, or that's how I look at it. So without further ado, this is a walker, a Louis Vuitton walker that Gabe made for me.
Incredible. We saw this in the pre-show when we were getting ready. I saw this behind you and I was like, that, what is that? So did he cut up a handbag?
Yeah. See, it's like a Louis Vuitton handbag.
Oh my God. That's so dope.
And then he made this. It's like the level of detail is just absurd.
That might be the most expensive AT-AT walker.
more expensive than the actual film prop.
Yeah, probably.
He actually, that was the second thing he made. So, I'll show you the first thing.
Yeah, what was the first thing?
So excited.
Audio listeners, spare with us.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
So
Power
cool.
Ranger helmet.
Yeah. Oh my freaking Lord.
That is rad.
Look at the level of detail. I mean, this is crazy. The level of detail gone up.
Is that a Metal Gear NES cart next to that?
Yeah. Metal Gear, Tetris, Ninja Gaiden. That's like my...
Your fucking house is incredible, dude.
This is really cool.
So I need to ask you a question here. We saw you during, I want to say it was something during E3. I don't remember exactly what it was. And you were in a home theater that made me so jealous, where you had like blue recliners. Is that in your house?
I can neither confirm nor deny that, but this is so, dude, check this out. This is like a sculpture I have in my place, by this artist in New York called Jack Greer.
That's badass. Like a chainsaw.
Chainsaw. Right. So like, you know, you That's walk cool. in the front door, right? So you walk in the front door and then you're like, oh shit, there's like a Jack Kirby inspired mural. I'm probably going to fuck with this guy. I'm going to fuck with this guy because he's a nerd. Yep. Oh, wait.
Chainsaw.
He might cut me up.
Yeah. But But then you keep going, you see the Louis Vuitton ATA Walker, you're like, oh, I'm gonna, hang with this guy. We're gonna hang with this guy for sure.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
I love that we just got a cool tour. I wasn't expecting
it's like a house MTV tour. Cribs. Mm-hmm. It's like MTV Cribs.
But MTV Cribs for stuff that I actually care about. Because MTV Cribs would always be like, this is my dope ass ride. I'm like, that's too much insurance for that car. Yeah, show me the NES cartridges.
Oh shit.
Earthbound, like sealed.
Worth a pretty penny there.
Sealed Duke Nukem 64.
Oh, of course, right? When you think Earthbound, what do you put next to it? Of course,
naturally. No. That's the actual Dread Helmet from the movie.
No way. Shut up. Wait, go back to that.
So cool.
Is that the one Carl Urban wore?
So there were a few. There were like many, you know.
Oh, right, because they had a bunch of judges, right?
Right. No, but that is one of the ones Carl wore.
Oh, that is so dope. Let me ask you a question. Real talk though. Right. Do you ever put, when no one's looking, you ever put that thing on and just say, Mama is not the law. I'm the law.
I used to do that like back in the day.
Every day.
Yeah. I do that. I say that to my wife every once in a while. And she's like, I've only seen that movie once. I was like, oh, you need to see it 20 more times, ma'am. Yeah, because I love that freaking film.
Oh, I'm gonna show you something else.
Please do.
This might not like mean anything to anybody. But here we go.
I mean, this is our podcast, so most of the time.
Oh yeah.
Snatcher from the Sega CD.
The Sega CD.
Yeah.
Was that the add-on that they did for the Sega Genesis?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That 32X.
Amazing. So the history behind that game is just absurd. Just absurd.
What's this G.I. Joe mint on card going on down here?
Oh, yeah. That's like actually, Netflix bought that for me.
Really?
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Netflix bought that for me. That's why I put it up there. Because Netflix bought that for me. That's
so hilarious. Do they buy it for you as like a thank you for doing the Castlevania series or? You're just homies with all those people and they just buy you cool shit?
No. This was definitely just a thank you, but it was like specifically geared towards me, which was awesome.
So cool.
Adi, are really you the cool type of collector that tries to get any of these like graded
cool
for reselling or anything like that? Like, are you the type that tries to get them graded with like actual memorabilia people, or you're just like I just like having them?
Yeah, I'm not trying to get them. I mean, I guess I probably should. You know what? Here's what I don't like about the graded thing. It makes because I'm like a stickler for aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
So that looks sick, right? Like it's in cool a box, it's sealed, right? The moment it's graded, you've got like this tacky sticker on it that says 9.8. And I'm just like, dude, you kind of make, oh, dude, this is a 17th century dentist chair.
Why is it so scary?
Terrifying. It's terrifying, right?
It's just so scary.
It's like the arms come up.
Look at that.
Wait, so no, let's stop right here. Wait, okay. Where did you see this that you're like, I got to have this right next to my kitchen?
Netflix gave it to him.
No, it was Amazon. They're trying to lure me away. I'm going to try to like recline it. It like literally, you hold it back, right?
I got to call Jeff Bezos and be like, you guys got to give better presents. This is terrifying.
So you pull this arm back.
That's cool.
And then it reclines and it slides.
Uh-huh.
It's like literally from the 17th century. That's fucking crazy. This is the kitchen. So you have like like fucking Captain Crunch.
Yes.
Holding down the fort.
And Toucan Sam. Love it.
Yeah.
What are these? What are these?
Sam looks like he's about to fuck you up.
Sam doesn't fuck around.
Yeah. There's this artist named Ron English. R-O-N English. Like the way one spells English. And he made a whole series of like these making fun of the cereal mascots. And they're like, what would these guys look like if they ate the product that they're fucking selling?
Too much
of
the cereal.
Kids? Yeah.
They'd be very overweight.
So they're
like
cracked out. Yeah. And then I got, this is great artist. I don't know if people know who he is. His name's Kaz.
Oh, yeah. He worked with Kanye back in the 808s and Heartbreaks.
Yes.
Audio what listeners, you got to watch this one. Sorry.
Oh my God. Do you see that right there? Was that's a Gray Fox's mask, right? That's awesome.
That's actually from Guardians of Justice.
Wait, go back.
Oh, really?
That's a good segue. What is Guardians of Justice?
There's like, Yeah, I've got like the original Street Fighter 2 unopened.
Oh, wow.
Sick.
Oh, Gray Fox is to the left, though, Kevin. That's what you were seeing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought, but it...
Gray Fox inspired, maybe.
Let's do a perfect transition.
Yeah, let's talk about your show, man. We watched the first two episodes, and it is definitely an Adi Shankar joint. I enjoyed shit out of it. It is bonkers. Where did how did this come about?
Wow! Thank you.
I love it. I'm excited about this.
How did it come about? Where did it come about? I didn't understand why stories weren't told this way in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it's told in an interesting way. That's the feedback I've gotten.
It was very non-traditional for sure.
This is how my mind works.
Okay.
So this is like, sense. So it's kind of like, yeah. So it's like, watching this is like spending, you know, X amount of time inside my head.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good time. And I used to,
a lot going on.
And I, yeah, lots going on. I don't know if you guys remember, but there were like even years ago, I guess when I first started quote breaking out on the scene, I was really fucking bad at doing interviews. I was awful, like taking long pauses and all that. It's just because my mind would work faster than I could articulate. Mm-hmm. And I was also very shy. And also, when I would imagine things, I couldn't imagine them in live action. So I would imagine them in cartoon.
Okay.
Even memories felt animated to me.
It's mm-hmm. like the aliens in The Arrival. It's like aliens in Arrival, where they see time in a different way. Adi's on that level.
You know what I always thought, Andy, when I watched the movie, I was like, why do they communicate with coffee cup stains?
Yeah, that's what we all thought.
Weird.
We all thought.
So yeah, watching the show, I mean, it's a mix of live action and a lot of different styles of animation. Was that done?
Yeah.
How did that come about? Like, did you reach out to just various studios for that? Or were you just like, I want this to be CG. I want this to be classic 2D animation.
It was that. And it gets crazier as the show progresses. So all in all, there's, I mean, I say there's eight styles of animation, but then when you go into like the nuances of the micro styles within the styles, like you have about 32.
That's
It was literally just that. I'm like, okay, I'm seeing this. Can you make this exact shot? And people were working in a vacuum. So no one really knew what I was making until I'm like, oh, done.
Is that kind of how it started, though? Because, I mean, you've been doing the bootleg universe stuff for a long time now. Was this kind of Netflix being like, hey, we're just buying into the Adi vision. Like, what is the bootleg universe show that you're making, and we're just going to give you money and go for it?
More nuanced than that.
Tim, they showered him with Mint on Card G.I. Joe's. And he was like, fine, I'll give you a show, Netflix.
Totally. so I've been working on this for 6.5 years.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I should kind of preface.
Yeah, let's dial it back and tell it to the audience who doesn't know what the show is all about. Give them the pitch on what Guardians of Justice is.
It kind of lures you into thinking you're watching a superhero show.
Mm-hmm.
But then becomes everything but a superhero show, because I like didn't want to make a superhero show. I guess the other way to kind of look at it is if you looked at the Bootleg Universe one-shot fan film series, this is a more grown-up, longer form version of that. That's another way to look at it. It's kind of a passion. I mean, I obviously it's a passion project of mine. I had this like as you can tell, I'm not a great pitch. Well, I'm not a great pitcher. I'm a bad
pitcher. Well, this show's a little bit hard, like difficult to pitch, dude, because it is like
Adi,
it is
okay. We're on a long elevator right now. It's a long ass elevator. We're on a floor 340. You got plenty of time.
So for what I like about it is it's sort of a twist on the classic. I don't want to give too much away because I want people to definitely watch it, but it's a twist on the classic sort of like Justice League Superman storyline, where it goes very dark very quickly. And it's a really cool combination of styles from presumably different animation houses, right? Like how many different groups worked on the actual animations? You said 8, right? Or 12. Okay.
12.
And was that done for sort of economy of shooting, or were you like, I just want this from this person, this from these people? What's going on with that?
I realized like one of my core things that I'm kind of good at is, let me back up. Sorry.
Back it up.
As I was just saying that, I'm like, what the fuck are you saying? You're just
talking. Listen, man, as a person who fucks up every intro for every podcast has ever been on, you're in good company.
No, good company here.
You're in great company.
It wasn't like done for economic reasons. It was done like, just I had a different rapport with different artists.
Okay.
And I could pull a different kind of thing out of them, right?
And are a lot of these studios people that you've worked with before, Adi?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Some of them. So I knew kind of like strengths and weaknesses. And again, look, I it was like a crazy process because you're learning how to direct across all these different mediums. And I hadn't done it before.
So what's really cool about it too, and like for people that haven't heard about it yet or actually seen a trailer or anything for it, like what's cool about the show and what we're talking about, a bunch of different animation styles, is like in the course of 30 seconds, one scene will go from live action to 2D animation to like 3D animation to like video game 8-bit style pixel art. And it's seamless where those aren't different shots, like different scenes. It's all part of like the same conversation. So it's like it's the most similar thing I can compare it to is I'm forgetting the name of the way they do this, but like when fans recreate Star Wars,
right?
It's like shot by shot is all a different like vibe to it, like everyone has a unique, but it's like if that was a brand new IP, if it was a brand new vision being created, and like it creates this like really interesting kind of insanity.
And plus it's live action. I don't know if we've mentioned that either.
Right.
There's a lot of live action. Yeah.
Yeah. Tim, that's what it kind of popped with me, except for take out the fans and put in professional animation studios. Cause a lot of the 2D stuff was it was super cool and like very, very like nostalgic for me to see that level. And that's that style of animation in a superhero movie. And then also just the mixture of old, you do a lot where you mix, I think it's old news footage of like wars and stuff like that, and you throw in some of the characters in that, which is pretty cool and pretty seamless as well.
Yeah, because I could kind of use artificial intelligence and obviously set extensions to take stock footage and then augment it to like turn it into something else.
Top level stuff. So the show's called Guardians of Justice. It is on Netflix. Do we have a release date for this?
No, it'll be like at top of next year.
Okay, cool. Okay. Early 2022, everybody.
Could we get more episodes?
It played at Cannes yesterday.
Oh, that's cool.
It was in competition. Yeah, it was in competition. Thank you. It was in competition for the Big Cannes Award. It didn't win. I just found that out like a couple hours ago, but
you were robbed.
It's all right, whatever. No, so it got in again, which was crazy.
That's awesome.
I didn't know if anyone would understand this. You know, I'm like, am I a crazy person? I mean, the answer is yes, I am a crazy person.
Wait, understanding getting in a can or understanding the show itself?
The show.
Copy that.
Just,
okay.
Just anything. Just any. You know. Also, like the pacing of it is insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I intentionally paced it the way I paced it because.
That's how your mind works.
Yeah.
Well, that's how my mind works. Yeah, it's how my mind works. And also, like, I wanted to, like, the show's about chaos ultimately. Mm-hmm. Like, thematically, that's one of the things that are going on there. So, so, like, I wanted you to visually feel chaotic while watching it.
Well, so, that definitely comes across for sure.
And I wanted to feel like I was jumping out of your TV and pouring Starburst into your eyeballs.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it. I was, I started watching the first episode yesterday after we wrapped a podcast, and time sort of stood still for a hot second. And I'm like, I ended up rolling it back halfway through and rewatching the second half of the first episode. Cause I'm like, I got a lot of it, but I'm not sure if I got all of it. And I want all the Starburst in my eyes.
I mean, it's really crazy. Cause like, yeah, it's similar for me where I started watching it and the first episode was over like before I even had time to think about it all. And it moved so quickly where it's so internet, but it has the production value of kind of filmmaking, like a filmmaker's perspective. And so it's like nonstop things being thrown at you, and whether it's references to things or like cameos or just different actors popping up that you would never necessarily think would be together, but then when you see them together, you're like, this is rad. Like, I think rad's a really good word to describe the show.
Yeah, what's the process with, I don't want to, again, we have to be very careful not spoiling stuff because I'm very, very bad at it, but how do you reach out to these people to be in this? What's the process there?
So this was
like, are you friends with them in Dallas?
Very, very, very unorthodox, very unorthodox. With the exception of like a small group of people, I had personal relationships with everyone in the cast. So I just texted them or called them and was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. Can you show up on Tuesday? And they're like, what is it? I'm like, I'll try to explain it to you, but you'll get frustrated. So
just show up and have a costume for you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know, and a few people were like, you know, like, yeah, like what one actor at one point was like, my acting teacher's rolling in her grave right now. What are you making me do? Like, this is horrible acting. I'm like, yeah. No. It's supposed to be overacted.
It's all very
nailing it.
Yeah, because the whole vibe is very over the top. I love it.
Well, the live, so this isn't like a live action show that is mixed media. This is a cartoon that turns in. You know what I mean? Like this is a cartoon in live action.
Interesting.
Because I like cartoons. Exactly. Speed Racer was one of the references for sure.
Oh yeah.
You know, as was Natural Born Killers. Now, I didn't like the movie Natural Born Killers. You know, I thought that the plot.
We've talked about Natural Born Killers.
Fucking suck it.
We've talked about Natural Born Killers a lot on this podcast.
Last week, for some reason.
I don't know why. Mostly because I think Woody Harrelson was in Venom. What was our reference for last week?
No, that's why. That's why. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
God, sorry.
But yeah, like the, you know, Natural Born Killers, you know how it like kind of constantly goes back between
it's like an LSD trip the entire time. Right. Yeah.
And I watched that and I'm like, that was the first time I watched it and I was like, whoa, this is how I see the world. Like, and I didn't understand why everything wasn't done like this. And then so that was I don't want to even say an inspiration. It just unlocked potential.
It definitely reminded me of that use, right? Of that like that free form style of not necessarily being like nailing down the image, like having that be free form and stuff.
Right.
So if you're a big fan of Natural Born Killers and you want to see what Superman would be like in that world, definitely check out Guardians of Justice. If you want to see what Superman would look like on LSD, then this is the show for you.
Well, what I love about it too is like every, I don't even want to say 5 seconds, like every second something else is on the screen that like might catch your interest and like someone else is going to pop up. Like the biggest thing I marked out for, we see Andy Milonakis come and I'm like, holy shit, it's Andy Milonakis. And then like 10 seconds later, Denise fucking Richards pops up and me and Gia are like marking out as like Beverly Hills Housewives fans number 1 and 2 at this point.
Oh my god, I never thought
I'd see a project with Denise Richards and Andy Milonakis in the same situation.
I mean, we hoped, we had hoped,
we did hope, we did
one
hope
could keep, we keep the dream alive for that, but but yeah, that's what's so fun about this is at one point, and I had this noted to ask you, is Danny Shepard in one scene of the second episode?
Yeah.
Did you get him in this? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's Mock like, himself who's coming on next week, everybody.
Oh really? I didn't notice that. Oh,
yeah,
he's in.
He gets thrown against a truck or something like that. I was like, that, I know that guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. He gets fucked up.
Yeah.
Adi, when it comes to all the different animation studios, at the end of the day, like, it seems like an organizational nightmare for me, like for my brain to try to compartmentalize what studios are working on what. Yeah. At the end of it, do you have just like a shit ton of drawings and stuff that doesn't get put in the actual final product?
No.
Wow, that's crazy.
Like, I used every single frame. So I used to have a photographic memory.
What the hell is that?
You remember every single thing that's like you've ever seen or done or whatever. And it's the opposite of how we operate.
Oh yeah. Cause I already forgot the last thing I just asked.
Exactly.
Sorry. So I used to have a photographic memory. So I kind of knew every frame and I knew exactly what I needed. I just didn't have the tools always to articulate it. And that was like the big learning, through the process of making this, right? The gaps, where are the gaps in the Adi Shankar communication and how they're received by a third party. Like, I'm like, oh wow, I communicate in a very confusing fucking way. Holy shit. And then, you know, once I dialed that in and I started understanding how things got received, that was just tectonic shift in like every aspect of my life, really. But yeah, I used to have a photographic memory, but you know, that one of the genesises of these projects is I don't want to spoil the show.
There's no spoil. I don't think you can spoil this show. I don't think this is one of those shows you can't really spoil. Yeah.
Well, you know, I felt suicidal.
Oh, okay.
During the directing of the show or during the concepting of all of it?
No, like that's what inspired this show. Like, I was like deeply fucking depressed and kind of like, oh my God, like what the fuck is happening to me? And I felt like a prisoner like a prisoner in my own body. Not like I was a prisoner in my own body. I'm sorry. I'm trying to like talk around this without trying to be woe is me and kind of.
Oh no.
But that was one of the genesises of this project. I was trying to like kind of heal myself while trying to kind of feel seen by the world. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to like create a piece of art with how I'm feeling to maybe get clues and how to heal myself. So the whole thing was a transformational journey for me where I was trying to heal my mental the fragile mental state that I found myself in, that I didn't have the tools necessarily to crawl out of. Mm-hmm. I went and saw a doctor who was like, dude, you don't look right. So they put me on antidepressants. One of the side effects of antidepressants is it messes with your memory. So when I say that I used to have a photographic memory, one of the things that it did was it went away. So I lost access to this ability I had.
Oh wow.
For a thing. So then it was a gift because it forced me to start taking notes and planning in a different way, because all of a sudden there was this kind of superpower that I'd relied on for, you know, I mean, fuck, that was even like the photographic memory was how I broke into Hollywood.
So did this allow you to sort of be able to communicate a little bit differently with your team and the people you were like, you know, producing stuff with?
It didn't allow me to, it forced me to, I had to fix. Well, one, I had to, you know, fix the gaps in the way I communicated, but then two, like, you know, there was like a plethora of ways in which I self-sabotaged and held myself back and kind of was angry at myself that I had to overcome, because I didn't start this project as the guy who could finish it. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't just simply finish it. I had to become the person that could finish.
Interesting.
So where you're at now, are you feeling like you're that guy?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, in Dragon Ball, when their hair becomes gold.
Super Saiyan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was a joke.
I was like, I mean, honestly, if that's like, how you're feeling, that's great.
You guys were like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. We're just, I mean, on a personal level, I'm glad that you found a way through, and I'm glad that you found an outlet for that. That was positive. And you know, we like having you on the show. So we're happy you're still with us.
Oh, microphone got very
kind of nuts. I mean, kind of, the whole thing. I mean, I'm skirting around a lot of nuance here, but yeah.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, obviously, we don't want to dive too deeply with you if you don't feel like going there.
I'm happy to.
Yeah,
I'm happy to. But it was, you know, I wasn't born in America. I grew up mainly outside of America. I'm South Asian Indian. Mental health is like not only not a thing that's recognized there in that culture, it's a taboo. So no one talks about their feelings and kind of communicates and stuff like that. So
we are more than happy to talk about mental health in this podcast. We've been very open with some of our struggles as well here. And I think it's incredibly important to do so. And I think that, I mean, me personally, like I think we've talked a lot about our need, even in this society, to destigmatize it. I still think there's a huge stigma around mental health, and it's silly. It's dumb. The way I look at it and the way I've told people is, if you need help for, you know, if your knee's hurting you, you go to a doctor. And why is it so silly if you're having trouble dealing with your feelings that you would go to a therapist? That makes no sense to me. I'm glad you were able to find someone that could help you for sure. And if the medication is helping as well.
I mean, through the process of making this, like, I completely got off the net, like everything I
healed. Are you seeing a therapist as well, if you don't mind me asking?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But I don't see the therapist now for kind of mental health reasons. Mm-hmm. I see the therapist to ask. My childhood was just very, very unorthodox. Like every year and a half, like we moved not just to a different city, but a different country, a different civilization. Yeah. So I didn't have like, so the lens through which I was viewing reality was not consistent ever, and it kept changing. And I had like, so there was no consistency. So having a consistent person that I talk to every week that can give me feedback on how they're seeing reality is incredibly helpful.
That's a great way of putting
that. I just want to say something to you guys about the mental health thing in the South Asian culture, because I don't know how many, you know, the demographic breakdown of your audience. But so, you know, the reason mental health is so stigmatized in the South Asian ecosystem, culture, is our entire society is built around arranged marriage, really marriages. And a lot of them are arranged marriages, right? Like the movies are predominantly about marriage, like, you know, people spend an exorbitant percentage of their net worth on their kid's marriage. Like, it's just insane. The whole thing is marriage. So there's like a fear or a concern that, you know, if someone talks about mental health, then it'll hurt that person's marriage.
Interesting.
Because there's like the marriage market, right? Like,
right.
Everyone's like, you're not picking a husband or a wife based on, I mean, you're picking it somewhat, well, one, someone's picking it for you, but it's based on like a resume. It's like, oh, you got an MBA. Well, that's great. You're like a doctor. Oh, that's great, right? Oh, you've got mental health issues. It's like, whoa, no. And then it actually gets more sinister than that, because there's a fear that like it's genetic.
So you might pass it along to the children.
Right. So it's like, it's like old school, like madness, you know, like, oh, there's madness in that family.
Yeah. But that's why I think it's important that everyone talks about it. Cause I think first and foremost, like everyone's got something, right? It might not be as intense or as severe as what other people are dealing with, but I really do think, I look forward to a future in like 10 or 20 years where people talk openly about these issues. Like they do, like they talk openly about, I mean, I just shared last week that my knee is killing me, right? I got no cartilage left in one of the sides of my left knee. And I have no trouble sharing that. Why is it any different than that would not preclude me from getting a job somewhere, right? Well, it might preclude me from getting a job as, like, you know, a crossing guard or something like that, where I have to get kids out of the way of danger. But other than the physicality of it, no one's gonna frown upon me on that. So it's just, I know, Kevin, I got halfway through the reference. And I was like, you gotta go.
That was good. I mean, I love how you're like, okay, what job do I need my knees for? Crossing guard.
Can I just think? I think you see the speeding bus, right? Sorry. You're like, I gotta move fast and grab a kid by the scruff of the neck, right? Is that how you pick up kids by the scruff of the neck, Kevin?
Yeah,
just like grab them like that.
That's the best way.
And you got to get them out of harm's way. But no, yeah. But I mean, I'm glad we're talking. I'm always happy to talk about this, and I'm glad we're talking.
The weird disconnect that was going on in my life at this time, right? How do I say this in a kind of concise way? I felt like in my 20s, I was doing big stuff, mm-hmm. right? Big movie stars.
Dope movies.
Great
dope
movies.
Movie stars.
And the way people started reacting to me started no longer syncing with how I felt about myself. And that made me feel like more and more alone as time went on.
Did you feel like you had some sort of imposter syndrome? Is that what you're talking, or is it something different?
It's different than that. It was almost like a reality distortion.
Ah, okay.
On some level, right? I was walking around with like face paint on. I mean, I still wear face paint, but yeah. I had my face paint on, and I wanted to play this character. So it was easy to like psychologically
remove yourself
to yeah. right attribute it to this character.
It's like WWE. Well,
yeah.
Oh, it's 100%. It's 100% WWE. I did some podcast or something, some interview like a few weeks ago. And it was an older gentleman. He was like, oh wow, you're a Kiss fan. And I'm like, no. Fuck no. No, like, I'm like, fuck no. That was like Sting, Ultimate Warrior,
yeah.
Hero,
yeah. Yeah.
You know. Like
he's like, oh, Sting, the police. You're like, no, you're not getting any of this.
Like, you know that message in the bottle? You know that fucking yeah. message in the bottle, bro? I didn't read that shit. I didn't give a fuck what that message had to say.
I was coming down from the rafters.
I was too busy. Exactly. That's what I was about to say. Like with a helicopter.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That reminds me. I watched the Lady Gaga documentary a long time ago, and she spoke about that too, where she'd have a lot of theatricality to sort of have that almost a buffer between her and the real world. And that was very much because of it. You know, it's intense when you do projects like you've done. There's a lot of stuff put on your shoulders, a lot of pressure put on your shoulders, especially when the media is writing stories about you. So, I mean, I can only imagine. Again, yeah. People don't write up my stories about being a superhero crosswalk crossing guard.
Well, I mean, something I want to say with that is, like, you know, there's the big projects like Dread and stuff, but even like a lot of the smaller bootleg universe stuff, like I am such a huge fan because I love how you take these like beloved IP, but kind of strip it down to just one core essence. Like I remember the James Bond short you did of just like really dealing with what would it mean once James Bond gets old? And it's like, we've seen the movies kind of like deal with it, but they deal with it in such a like surface level way of like, okay, he's gonna retire and like, oh, one more time, you just gotta come back. But the way you dealt with it was like more real, or like the Power Rangers short of like, these are children, teenagers that are being militarized. Like dealing with that as a concept is so cool. Or even like Body, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, the rap battle movie. It's a movie about rap battle, but it's actually about what makes their brains tick that way. Like how do they communicate with all of that? And I just think that it's interesting having this conversation with you, because it's like you're talking about how you've had all these different like civilizations and cultures like growing up, and it's like I see a lot of the kind of the seeds and cores in each of these shorts and different projects you've been a part of you trying to crack the nut of like what really is the culture and civilization of that moment, if that makes sense.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't aware that that's what I was doing, although that's what I was doing. And then I kind of gained an awareness of it, like, I think a couple of years ago. And I gained the awareness because I started understanding why I was doing that. Because I had a fuck, you know, I felt like my childhood was kind of taken away from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt this need to go in and take, you know, and be like, oh yeah, this, you know, fuck you, it's dark. Like, on a subconscious level, that's because that's how I was viewing it as a kid, right? Because I was like kind of a traumatized child. And so I'm like viewing as a traumatized child, like kind of a happy image through this lens of what are they not telling you? So once I got out into the real world and, you know, just started kind of making, became an artist, even though I didn't realize that's what I was doing. That is the kind of story I was constantly trying to tell, to almost the detriment of my career in some ways, right? Because because you guys don't know about the projects that didn't happen or the meetings that I went in and like, you know, like DreamWorks, for instance, reached out to me a number of years ago and they're like, hey, we want to, you know, do something with you. We love your point of view, your perspective. Here's our intellectual property library, you know? And I was like, and I'd come in and I was like, look, here's what I want to do. And I don't want to do anything else.
I'm going to kill Shrek.
We're going to finally train that dragon.
A hard R. Where's Waldo?
That's amazing.
And
I have this whole bit,
and they're all like, "Who's this guy talking?"
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, "Hell, I didn't want to do it. I like really wanted to do a hard R. Where's Waldo?" Because I'm like, "What the fuck is this guy hiding from? Like, what the fuck is he running from?" You know what I mean? What the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Where's he been? Where's he going? I see this perspective.
I love.
Like,
that.
I appreciate.
Like,
this.
What was taken away from him?
He's like Jason Bourne.
No, exactly.
On the lam constantly.
Thought, like,
I never
the
thought
fucking,
about that.
The cane would be like his weapon. You know what I mean?
So I imagine they didn't go. They were like, hard R. We're not going to. Like, we might not go in that direction with that historic franchise.
And they definitely went away. And we're like, what happened?
who plays Waldo? Who are we casting damaged as Waldo, everybody?
Wait, before we get to that, ladies and gentlemen, because I do want to know who's going to cast Waldo, let's take a second to tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Overland. Cozy season is upon us. And if anybody out there knows me, they know that I love being cozy. I love being comfortable. And now I've learned there's nothing better for my feet to achieve that than these Overland sheepskin slippers. I've been loving it. They are so soft. They're so high quality. And the biggest thing that impresses me is her whole life, Gia's been like, I'm not a slipper person. Guess what? I'm catching her in these slips every day now. She looks so damn comfy. You gotta love it. Overland uses expert craftsmanship to pair the highest quality merino sheepskin, which is naturally moisture wicking, temperature regulating, and antimicrobial, with supportive memory foam midsoles to make slippers that feel and wear better for longer. Don't wait another day to slip into something way more comfortable. Get the best high quality sheepskin slippers on the market at overland.com/kindoffunny. You'll get free shipping and free returns, and I recommend you go today because these slippers are so beloved that they've been known to sell out. That's overland.com/kindoffunny. 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 Next up, shout out to Babbel. A lot of us are thinking about travel again, but not knowing the language of our destination can make even the simplest things harder. But you can change that with Babbel, the number one selling language learning app. Their short lessons on practical topics from menus to directions to local culture make it a travel essential. Greg Miller's been using Babbel to learn a little bit more French so he can impress Jen, and it's been going very, very well. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it easy for learning on a busy schedule. Other language learning programs rely on AI, but Babbel works with language experts to create their lessons. And Babbel's teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, and German, even Turkish and Indonesian. Plus, their speech recognition technology can help you improve your pronunciation and accent, because even if you are a tourist, you don't need to sound like one. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use the promo code MORNING. That's BABBEL.com, code MORNING. Babbel, language for life. And finally, shout out to Raycon. There's so much going on right now, whether it's stuff you're excited about like traveling or stuff you'd rather avoid like traffic. You can't always control the vibes out there, but you can control the vibes in your own head when you've got a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears. Cool Greg's been training for a half marathon, and as he's been getting his run on, as he's been working out, he's been listening to his jams using his everyday Raycons. He's been loving them. Raycon's new everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. They've got an improved rubber oil look and feel and optimized gel tips for a perfect in-ear fit. Plus, you get 3 new sound profiles, so the sound is great no matter what you're listening to, whether it's a podcast like this, rock music, EDM, hip-hop. It's all cool. Raycons start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound every bit as good. Right now, Kind of Funny listeners can get 15% off their Raycon order at buyraycon.com/kindoffunny. That's buyraycon.com/kindoffunny to save 15% on Raycons. Buyraycon.com/kindoffunny.
Okay, we're back from the sponsors. I have a question from Patreon, but I do want to know who we'd cast as Waldo. So before I get to this amazing question from Eric Myers over on Patreon, who do we want to cast as Mr. Waldo in this?
So here's the thing. If it's DreamWorks, it's animated.
Right.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. Oh, unless, Andy, if you want to make it a modern Audi project.
No, I love the idea of it being animated. Who's the voice of Waldo? Is he a voiceless character? Is this like a Zelda type situation with Link?
No, I think he's got to have perspective.
I'll give you just a kind of couple direction things. Yeah, I saw you. It in a you know that kind of that Playmobil style animation feels very European but very crisp, yeah, and not gritty at all. So almost feels like a kid's cartoon. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have like that. So the blood felt like it was literally clay coming out. So when he'd like whack you with his cane, there'd just be like kind of almost like a delicious goo. And Waldo's voice, I didn't want it to match his physicality because I wanted him to look just like Waldo, but then he talks like this. It's like, listen, motherfucker, I'm here. Yeah.
So I'm gonna throw this out there, just top of my head, no reference whatsoever. I hear animated, I hear character, I think Chris Pratt. Let's just go with it. He can do everything.
He can do it all. Super Mario, Chris Pratt. I love that, Nick. I love that.
I want to go Tom Hardy with this Venom voice.
Tom Hardy with Venom. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Josh Brolin. I would love Josh Brolin.
Oh, Josh Brolin, I think, would do a great job with that. Yeah. There you go. Eric Myers writes in and says, last time Audi came on the podcast, he pitched a crazy Captain Planet movie. My question is, what's your magic school bus pitch?
Oh,
off the top of your head. He just wants to know for fun if you have a magic school bus pitch. If you hard R magic school bus starring Chris Pratt, that's my pitch.
So,
you
didn't grow up in America, so kind
so
of
no
broad
context.
Strokes. I'm familiar with it. It's like, so it's a school bus of people that like kind of go.
Your guess is as good as mine. I've only ever seen the parodies that are on YouTube that Tim showed me of the Magic School Bus.
Our homies, Movie Mind Studio. That's right. Ryan George from Screen Rant, I think, did that in 2012. But the pitch on Magic School Bus is Miss Frizzle is their teacher. She's wacky. She's crazy. They go on all these adventures. So she's teaching the kids about the intestinal system. They'll get in the magic school bus. It'll shrink down. And then they go like take a field trip to the intestines. Or if they're learning about outer space, that magic school bus, guess what? It's going to space. That's it. That's the pitch. It's every episode. Okay,
dude, that just sounds like a story of like a bunch of privileged assholes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I never rode the bus.
I know you're Neil Armstrong, but quite frankly, fuck you, dude.
So they all die in space, basically, is what Audie's trying to say. They all go up there and then
they all grow up. No, fuck that. They all grow up and they have these like, you know, fucked up expectations. They have like a lot of expectations of how the world should, you know.
Oh, because they had such an awesome childhood. I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Except for
you're
when
constantly chasing
Arnold died in space.
Oh, yeah. That one of the kids died in space.
One of the kids died in space?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrifying.
They got him back, though. I think it was just an animation goof. But
that's a cartoon.
It was scary.
I have a question.
Or it could be a heist movie where they have to steal the bus again.
Yeah.
Or it's like a rival like a group of kids who are not from the privileged thing who like want to steal the bus because they're like, fuck this shit, and they're like going and
we want
like
that teacher.
We
couldn't get into that school because we didn't have enough money, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
we gotta
and
go back
yeah,
to space.
That's, yeah.
I have a question for Adi, just regarding how the hell do you juggle all of these projects? Like, I obviously Guardians of Justice is your main baby. I feel like that might be the one that you are probably most involved with, just based on watching it. All the other stuff you're doing, again, you were on Netflix Geeked and you showed off a lot of newer projects that are coming in the future. How the hell do you juggle all this?
So that's a great question. You know, I didn't really do anything else. Right. So, you know, it's not like I have a family. It's not like I have kids. Mm-hmm. I kind of moved to Los Angeles with a singular goal. I mean, you saw the place I live in, right? Like, this is this is like, I kind of,
it's your creative space.
I exist almost in a 24/7 content creator capacity. So I think the word for it is workaholic.
Yeah, we like that.
So I'm actually, what I'm working on right now is finding a balance. But it's here's what's also weird about it. You know, at the same time, you know, I really should have crisp answers.
No, don't worry about that.
As I'm like thinking about it, like, you know, like, okay, so I think part of it was building a team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because for so long, I just didn't have a team. So it was all falling on me, like every aspect of it. So, you know, over the last 3 years, it's been a journey of like building a team, building an ecosystem, and then really now honing in on the part of the process that the industry wants me to do, right? Because I didn't fucking know. Like, I had no idea. So when I showed up, I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? You want me to like order pencils? I'll order pencils. Do you want me to, I don't know, make budgets? I'll make budgets. I don't know how to do it, but I'll figure it out. And then all of a sudden I realized like, oh, what they want me to do is create stuff.
Right.
Okay. So I'll just focus on that. So, you know, in Netflix Geeked, as an example of this, I'm working with Ubisoft on a completely new shared universe, multiverse project that remixes a lot of their intellectual property called Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix.
Right? Yes, you are. Sick.
And again, just... So, I mean, that project is so fucking rad. Crazy that I got to do it. But what was amazing with working with Ubisoft is they handle so much of the nonsense that in the past I thought I had to handle. And they just kind of handle it. So I'm just sitting there being like, oh, okay, here's what the toy looks like. Okay, here's what the thing, the comic book looks like. Here's what the character, this is what I'm just hyper focused on the creative. And for me, that happens really fast. It happens like really, really, really fast. It just comes in and I'm like, boom, here it is. Right.
Right.
Cause I'm just expressing it. The things that bogged me down was a lot of like the interpersonal stuff, the logistics,
the networking, all that shit,
all that stuff. Right. Like I once explained to one of my executives at Netflix, and I said, if you ask me to come up with beat out an entire episode, that'll take me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That's just how my mind works. If you send me an email asking, how am I? That's going to take me 3 days to respond because I'll go back and be like, so good to hear from you.
Right.
I hope all is well with you and your family. Next paragraph. So, and I don't know, like, am I supposed to be formal? It's supposed to be colloquial.
It stays in the drafts. And you're just like,
in the drafts. And then I'm like coming back and apologizing. Like, I'm so sorry. It took me 3 weeks to
tell you how I am.
I hope you're well. And I hope, you know, so, you know, it was just a process of that. And also again, this is a mental health thing. Cause then I went like, what? Okay. Why am I taking on stuff?
I was going to ask. I was going to say, do you think that contributed to sort of the stress and sort of your decline in mental health, feeling like you needed to do every aspect of everything?
Yes. There was a part of me that was like a massive control freak. And I didn't understand why. I didn't believe I was a control freak. like I didn't believe I was a control freak.
We never do, but then you need a Tim in your life to tell you just relax.
And you know, I guess I just, and not I guess, I mean, I know I had that there were trust issues.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
stemming from, again, trauma. Like it's just all the you know, trust issues. But
well, I imagine it's also pretty tough when you're doing projects where you are, you know, that you don't need a huge team for, where you can do a lot of stuff and you still get, you know, it still breaks through and gets that sort of recognition that you maybe start thinking to yourself, maybe I should do everything because I'm the one that, you know, when you make those first few projects that get millions of views on the internet and then you go immediately into like feature filmmaking, that is a positive reward process, right? So maybe it's difficult to let that go. No, am I off base?
No, I see why you're saying that. And that's a totally perfectly logical thing that, and I'm sure that holds true for a lot of people that, that wasn't my experience.
Okay.
And it, you know, okay. So as I've transitioned into becoming more of an auteur, I guess that's the word, like more of a, right? Is that a douchey?
No, it fits. It's a creative, like kind of just your visions in your mind, like you create it. It's unlike anything anyone's seen, even if it is tied to an IP that they know.
Yeah. And so as I became more and more of an auteur, like there's a different level of emotional attachment you have to the thing that you have to kind of heal, right? So with Guardians of Justice, for instance, like it feels like my child. Like straight up, it feels like my child, like in a way that doesn't really make sense. And I have to kind of like let it go and be like, okay, I need to like stop because there's a big part of you that just doesn't want to release it because you're like, oh, once I, you know. It's kind of like you take your child and then you like send them off to middle school or elementary school.
Right.
And
all or you of a sudden, put them in a magic bus, send them to Pluto.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And they kind of get influenced and it's no longer like yours and the whole thing. So, and I feel like part of my journey has been, understanding emotions, as weird as that sounds.
No, it doesn't sound weird at all.
I was like a intellectual person, you know, there's a lot of like ideas and theories and I spent a lot of time in my head. I didn't realize that there are other muscles like the heart and like emotion. I didn't understand these things because again, I was so cut off from my emotions, right? So I don't know how I got into that. There is a natural connection between this point and what I was saying before, and they do meld together.
We'll do that.
But it was like, but again, I had to like achieve a level of emotional maturity in order to just even be a leader, right? Because I didn't know how to lead before.
And that's probably pretty important when you're doing projects that require lots of people working with you, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And most of the time, the people are much older than me.
Yeah, that's got to be tough.
Right?
Because I mean, so, as the person who's always the oldest person in the room, it's I imagine other people that you have to order around that are older. Like when Kevin has to order me around, man, it's just, I can tell it breaks his heart to have to do it. But do you think that part of that also is just kind of like, and for lack of a better term, just like you growing up, you getting older, you maturing as an artist, and these are the tools that you start to sort of slowly accumulate over the years?
No. This was a thing that I have to go and acquire.
This is,
like,
okay.
I had to learn because it wasn't organically. It wasn't organically going to come from like, oh, now I've done six projects. So that, you know, it was. Yeah, actually, like the whole, So the whole like kind of mental health journey, all of it, like learning that why am I a control freak? Like, why don't I trust? Why do I self-sabotage? Why do I do this? Why am I holding myself back? Why am I so afraid to be seen? You know, is this character I'm playing for fun? Or is it like actually like me hiding? Like, why am I doing all these things? They were all interconnected. And once I kind of went through it, I was left with, all of a sudden my life just became a gift, because I was like, holy shit. Like, I had all this trauma and instability as a kid and as a teenager and as a 20 something. And my life was really insane. And I was doing all these things and it felt really chaotic and I was depressed and anxious. And now I'm like, oh my God, I have the rest of my life to just play and enjoy and create stuff in a sandbox. That's
really good.
That I get to play, you know, I can get to come on and talk to you guys. I'm like in my mind, you guys are like, I mean, not in my mind, like you guys are like friends, right? We're friends.
Yeah.
And we share a love of similar things, because we grew up with, in a relatively similar time period, even though I was in a different country. But like Guardians of Justice, for instance, it's a love letter to these, basically America in the 90s, all these American influences and Japanese influences that deeply affected me. And, you know, what's crazy about it is I get to share it with you guys and you guys are like, whoa, this is cool, man. And that's what it's all about. And that to me is a gift. That is like a gift. It's no different than like show and tell in school. And yeah, you know, we're just kind of older now. And once I started viewing life through that lens and I stopped having an antagonistic relationship with myself, I just feel free. Right. And I
That's
have
awesome.
To thank,
That's great.
And really like there were a few people who helped me on that journey. There were like really four people who helped me on that journey, helped me find that. And I'm like eternally grateful to these people. Two of them are James Vanderbeek and his wife, Kimberly Vanderbeek. Like,
awesome. That's awesome.
I didn't really have an example of what like masculinity looked like until James came into my life. Because, you know, I was playing pro wrestler for so long. Because to me, that's okay. So, you know, that's what it is. Like, you go up, you talk trash, and like, I'm tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
Greg tries it all the time.
I'm a nerd. You know, I'm a nerd. Like, what am I doing? Like I remember, you know, do you guys know this wrestler named John? He changes his name every week. John Morrison, John Hennigan,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Mundo. Johnny Nitro.
Oh, Johnny Mundo, that clicked right there. Yeah.
I remember calling him up last year. I said, Johnny, when I look at you, because this dude looks like a fucking action figure.
Oh yeah, him and the Miz.
He looks like an action. He makes the Miz look like a guy who doesn't work out.
Well, I'm saying they're a tag team together.
Oh yeah. And I called up Johnny and I was like, dude. I'm like subconsciously measuring how I look physically against you. Like that's crazy. That's crazy. And Johnny was like, dude, like your physical attributes are not your biggest strength, dude.
Yeah. That might be a slight unrealistic expectation for yourself.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that might set yourself up for a failure
on that one.
Dude, that was the paradigm. I'm trying to say that's the paradigm I lived under, right? Like when I was 22 and I graduated college, I woke up every day and what I would tell myself is every day that you don't have a number one movie in the US box office, you are a failure. And I would keep repeating that to myself. That's insane.
It's a lot of stress to put
insane.
On yourself.
That's a lot
at 22.
Of, like, yeah.
Well, I'm super glad that you found a way to enjoy your success, because I think that is super positive.
Yeah,
I think that's
fun now. It's fun now.
I think that's
like, this is amazing.
That's sort of like it's sort of like the end of the movie where the person gets out of his own way and realizes that he can be happy the entire time. I always love that sort of message, especially when they get to enjoy their success as well, which you've got a lot more coming.
Totally. It's really funny you say that, Nick, because earlier when you were talking about like getting the team together and like learning how to lead, it's like we always talk about how the getting the team together part of the movie is always our favorite part. Like that's always so cool. And once that happens, then you get to really have fun and see these characters interact together. And like in the case of this, it's kind of you just being creative and interacting with audiences and teams and all of that. Like before we end the show real quick, I just want to say like one of the biggest compliments I can give is the work you put into Castlevania, because that show, we talked forever about how comic book movies used to not really be that great, and then all of a sudden there was this turning point where now they are what they are. Video game movies still and adaptations still haven't had that transition point over into like, hey, no, these are legitimately good. And Castlevania is legitimately good. Like, and it what I love too is it's so different than any of your other projects where it isn't what if it was darker? What if it was this? It's literally just, how do we just do the best version of Castlevania possible?
Mm-hmm. Castlevania, dark enough. It's dark enough. Not well, we where's Waldo still
cry.
Waiting?
And we got Devil May Cry.
Fuck yeah, we do. I can't wait, man.
A friend of ours really, really, really wants to pitch you on a Bloodborne animated show. And so just in your mind, just keep that little nugget there, Bloodborne, because I would love... My gosh,
I know Bloodborne well. I know From Software well. I think, you know, I feel like, I mean, From Software is an example of a company that just knocks it out of the park, because they have like a singular vision in what they're executing, right? They're like the antidote to Electronic Arts.
Amen. I would love to see that tackled, as well as right now, all the rage is Metroid Dread.
Baby.
Oh my gosh, I just want to see a Metroid animated series done right. Yeah. Or just also done at all, period.
On Castlevania, I want to shout out Powerhouse Animation, because, you know, that was... Castlevania was a major, major, major team effort. There were a lot of artists all over the world who worked on it. So I don't feel an ownership over it like the way I do Guardians of Justice, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like someone asked me, I think it was someone at Ubisoft, they were like, I just feel like Castlevania was the right place, the right time. Mm-hmm. Like we on this call, and I guess the audience listening, we are the video game generation. You know, like when you go older, it's like when you go like 10, 20 years older than us, like the video games people had access to, they didn't have stories. They weren't dynamic. They were just kind of dots on a screen. We are the first generation that saw video games truly evolve into a language, forget mm-hmm. even an art form, like literally a language. So it was just a matter of time before someone made a good video game adaptation. I don't feel any sense of like pride or ownership over that, or even like Castlevania at all. It's just someone was going to do it, and it was going to be someone in our age demographic. And I happened to be at the crosshairs of where the universe was like, okay, and you're up. I'm like, oh, okay. It's kind of like you're like playing basketball and you like throw it and
oh, well, I think I speak for myself and a lot of the people in live chat right now, where when they say they're very glad you are at that crossroads, because everyone in the live chat right now is going nuts. They love the Castlevania series, as do we. And Adi, we look
and they're
forward.
Gonna love Devil May Cry.
Hell yeah,
Devil May Cry. Yes.
We're gonna wrap up this podcast right now, ladies and gentlemen, with Adi. Adi, thank you so much for joining us. We look for Guardians of Justice on what date again? Beginning of next year ish.
It'll be sometime next
okay.
year.
Okay, we're trying to con you out of a release date, but it's not going to work.
of course, Guardians of Justice.
There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, this is the Kind of Funny podcast. If you want to support us, you can go over to patreon.com/kindoffunny, where if you do, you get to be in the live chat right now talking to us and head straight into our Patreon exclusive post show, which we're going to do with Adi right now. If you got no bucks to give, of course, no big deal. We love you either way. Please subscribe to our channel. Leave a comment in the comment below, letting us know what your favorite Adi Shankar project is. Mine is Dread, but there's a lot out there. And if it is Dread, please type in, Mama is not the law, I'm the law. Until next time, I love you.
Bye.